Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, September 11, 2023. The spokesperson of the Sudan Armed Forces blames the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces for killing civilians in Khartoum over the weekend.
The militia group is known for terrorizing civilians and forcing them to vacate the houses either for looting purposes or the intent to use it for their military operations.
And President Salva Kiir says the resolutions of a recent conference will be adopted as government policy.
I would like to assure you that these resolutions will be implemented because we plan to give them a government-wide backing.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Eyewitnesses in the Sudanese capital say at least 46 civilians were killed and more than 100 others injured when a drone hit a local market in Mayo neighborhood south of Khartoum over the weekend. A member of a group calling itself Volunteer Youth says the injured are in critical conditions and are receiving treatment at Al Bashir Hospital. Michael Atit has more from Juba.
Mohammed Abdullah, a member of the volunteer youth group in Mayo, says at least 46 people, including women and children, were killed and 113 others injured during an airstrike believed to have been carried out by the Sudan Armed Forces on Sunday. Abdullah told VOA that the incident scared civilians in the area, adding that the drone attack resulted into a humanitarian disaster.
There was an airstrike around 7:15 p.m., which caused panic among local civilians, including those who were far away from the spot. This market is highly populated with civilians, and the attack caused huge humanitarian disaster.
Eyewitnesses say Goro Market, known for hosting a huge numbers of the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF troops, and serves as a trading center for looted goods from the neighborhoods in eastern Khartoum. Abdullah accuses the Sudan Armed Forces of carrying out the attack. He says there was poor rescue response after the attack.
People were forced to take the wounded people and carry them on donkeys and tuk-tuk because there was no ambulance available. It was a hard time for the wounded, relatives and medical volunteers at Bashir Hospital as well.
The RSF issued a statement on its Twitter account accusing the army of bombing the area. A statement issued by Brigadier General Nabil Abdullah, a spokesperson of the Sudan Armed Forces, accused what he called rebel malicious media for disseminating misleading false claims that the Sudan Armed Forces killed civilians. The military spokesperson says airstrikes are directed solely at rebel gatherings, locations and bases recognized as legitimate military targets. Nabil says RSF is using residential neighborhoods as human shields.
The militia group is known for terrorizing civilians and forcing them to vacate the houses either for looting purposes or the intent to use it for their military operations.
A group of Sudanese advocates, locally known as emergency lawyers, condemned the incident perpetrated by both sides in the Sudanese conflict. The group described the drone attack as inhuman actions and crimes against defenseless civilians. The United Nations reported that about 5.1 million people have been displaced inside and outside Sudan due to the conflict between the Sudan Armed Forces and the Rapid Support Forces that erupted since April 15th. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Still in Juba, South Sudan's government adopted a number of economic resolutions over the weekend. President Salva Kiir says the resolutions should now form a new policy direction for the country's economy. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
Participants at the five-day economic conference approved and adopted more than 150 resolutions aimed at reforming the country's economy. The resolutions include competitive recruitment of labor force in the public service, investing the country's oil revenues into agriculture, tourism, and mining. Speaking during the closing ceremony of the conference, President Salva Kiir says the outbreak of conflict in 2013 affected the country's economy. President Kiir says it is time to change the narrative, emphasizing that the resolutions passed during the conference should form a policy for economic transformation.
I would like to assure you that these resolutions will be implemented because we plan to give them a government-wide backing. It will not be up to the Ministry of Finance and Planning to decide what to do with the resolutions. They will be tabled in the Council of Ministers by the Minister of Finance himself and Planning for further discussions.
South Sudan's Minister of Finance and Planning, Barnaba Chol, called for a collective will from the government to implement ideas discussed during the economic conference. He acknowledges that the journey towards diversifying the country's economy is challenging.
It is a journey that requires collaboration among government institutions, private sector, civil societies, and our international partners. In closing, I want to emphasize that this conference is not the end, but rather the beginning of a new era for South Sudan. It is a call for action, a call to transform our economy, and a call to empower our people.
John Aprot Akech, the Vice Chancellor of the University of Juba, says the resolutions are good as long as the country's leaders show readiness to implement their ideas proposed at the conference.
I think they are possible, you know, as long as we have political will and to put resources where our mouth is, nothing is impossible.
Ahmed Morjan, a lecturer of economics at the University of Juba, calls for the implementation of the resolutions to address some of the challenges facing the country's economy.
You know, the economy is really hitting, and if it is not implemented, the implementers or those in position of implementing, they are also feeling it, and because it is hitting actually all the sectors.
South Sudan's economy continued to weaken over the past few years. The South Sudanese pound has continued to depreciate periodically. Over the past 5 months, the pound has depreciated by around 35% against the United States dollar, weakening the purchasing power of South Sudanese. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
From ground zero in New York to Alaska, U.S. political and military leaders are taking part in ceremonies to remember one of the darkest days in American history, 22 years ago, when 19 members of Al-Qaeda hijacked 4 planes. Nearly 3,000 people died in the coordinated attacks on September 11, 2001. For VOA News, VOA's chief correspondent Steve Harmon reports.
With sirens sounding in the background, the bell of hope was rung in New York City, close to where hijackers rammed 2 planes into the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001. At the Pentagon, where the commemoration honoring the 184 people who died there when a plane tore into the building, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin recalled the tragedy that compelled Americans to give back to the survivors, the rescuers, and their nation.
After the attacks, amid the horror and the grief, many Americans felt a deeper sense of duty to their communities and to their country.
Another ceremony was conducted in rural Pennsylvania, where a 4th plane crashed when some passengers managed to thwart the hijackers from reaching their apparent target, the U.S. Capitol building. Later Monday, President Joe Biden, on his way back from Asia, delivers remarks at a 9/11 ceremony at a military base in Alaska. Steve Herman, VOA News.
The death toll in Morocco has climbed past 2,000 following a massive earthquake late Friday. Buildings are reduced to rubble and survivors sleep outside for fear of dwellings falling around them. Help in many forms is on the way. VOA's Arish Arabsati has more.
A security camera captures the moment a 6.8 magnitude earthquake struck Morocco as a man runs for his life through rubble. It was a common scene last Friday as the quake shook parts of this North African nation. Morocco's public broadcaster, SNRT, released images of cars crushed by rubble, highlighting the challenges facing rescue workers. Much of the quake's damage was in mountainous regions where villagers had already begun burying their dead as of Saturday. And as Moroccans and tourists visiting their country took part in blood drives at area clinics, Morocco's King Mohammed VI ordered the nation's armed forces to mobilize search and rescue teams. He also called for special prayer services Sunday at mosques. Many Moroccans have been sleeping in the streets for fear of aftershocks destroying their already damaged homes. The United States and others have offered support to the government and people of Morocco.
We reached out immediately to the Moroccan government. Made very clear to them that we are prepared to assist in any way that we can. We have the U.S. Agency for International Development, which takes the lead in our efforts, mobilizing, and we're waiting to hear from the Moroccan government how we can be of most assistance. But we're tracking this very carefully, and our hearts go out to the people of Morocco who suffered this devastating earthquake, and we stand ready to help in any way that we can.
For those living through the disaster, their government's efforts have not gone unnoticed.
Authorities are doing their best, and even like in the high Atlas Mountains where people lost their lives and where that earthquake hit harder, they're trying to help. And I'm very sure that our people, our Moroccan people and our Moroccan community can get together and we can go through this.
Morocco has not seen this powerful an earthquake since 2004, when a magnitude 6.3 quake killed more than 550 people in one of the country's poorer regions. Morocco's worst earthquake in modern times happened in 1960. It destroyed most of the popular tourist destination of Agadir and killed at least 12,000 people. Arash Arabsati, VOA News.
Another 15,000 refugees are in camps outside the city.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the West Africa Regional Bloc faces some challenges. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what would you most likely to accomplish in life, and how close are you to achieving it?
My dream is to be one of the best filmmakers in Uganda and maybe in the world at large. With time and what I've done so far to achieve that, yes, I know I'm still very far, but I've written some scripts already.
To me, as a software developer, I still have a long way, but hopefully, God, I'll be able to make it.
I want to be a voice for the people who I meet and help people generally wherever I find myself. And I think that studying to become a lawyer is in the right direction to achieving that.
I would like to be a very, very great musician, composer. For now, I'm not close there, but I'm working to get to the level I can actually achieve that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp.
Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A series of coups in West Africa is putting the unity and capability of the regional bloc ECOWAS to test as it seeks to restore civilian rule in countries such as Burkina Faso, Guinea, Mali, and Niger. These four nations have joined forces to resist economic sanctions and potential military action by other 11 countries within the bloc. Experts warn the ability of ECOWAS to address security challenges is jeopardized by the rise of new military leaders. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, is grappling with how to deal with the military junta in Niger, which has been in power now for over a month. On July 26th, soldiers placed President Mohamed Bazoum under house arrest, accusing his administration of mismanaging the country's resources and allowing security situation to deteriorate. In response, ECOWAS imposed trade sanctions on Niger and even threatened military intervention. But the ongoing political and security crises in Niger, Burkina Faso, Guinea and Mali are proving to be challenging for the other 11 ECOWAS member countries. Paul Melly, a consulting fellow of the Africa Programme at Chatham House, says the coup leaders are not adhering to the established rules and engagement of the regional bloc.
Series of coups, if you like, is a really serious blow to what had been ECOWAS's greatest strength. And the fact that the military putschist regimes are defying the long-established ECOWAS tradition of collaboration in setting governance rules and in managing crises is a real threat, a real challenge to the region's unity.
In 2017, ECOWAS garnered praise for its collective military action against Gambian President Yahya Jammeh, forcing him to step down after he lost an election to the current President Adama Barrow. Francis Mangeni, a regional integration expert, notes that the current situation is quite different, with some coups enjoying apparent support from the people.
Now we're having situations where it's not that clear, where you have the people themselves apparently supporting the coups. So this introduces a certain element, you know, of complexity. So in other words, the legitimacy of the constitutionally elected governments seems to be in question. And this is an interesting thing really to say, because if they are constitutional, they're supposed to be legitimate. But apparently the people don't think so.
African Union leaders have been slow to condemn heads of state who change constitutions to extend their terms and alter age limits to remain in power. According to the experts, the rise of military takeovers in Africa is due to leaders overstaying power, electoral malpractices, and elected leaders' failure to work for the betterment of their citizens. Aware of the challenges, Nigeria's Senate advised President Bola Tinubu, who also heads ECOWAS, to explore alternative approaches to address the crisis in Niger. Mele says that the affected coup countries now treat their crisis as internal matters.
The collaborative culture under which essentially all ECOWAS countries accepted that the internal problems of a member state were in fact also the business of the whole bloc, that has been seriously eroded because they are not accepting the concept that ECOWAS as a whole has the right to become involved in managing their crises and moving them back towards constitutional rule. And that's a very big change.
Mangeni says the region needs the support of other African countries to solve the problems of frequent coups and coup attempts.
We need action at the AU level by the highest political organs of the AU with input from all stakeholders. We need real action to address this problem. And this action, as I said, should come from a consultative, inclusive process. And then fourthly, we need the goodwill of the international community or partners. Because as I said, some of these problems are caused by interference by some of our partners who are pursuing their interests.
The African Union has already suspended six countries where military forces seize power from civilians, including the four ECOWAS countries, Gabon and Sudan. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we go to Zambia, where a 2022 film highlighting the plight of a person with albinism in Zambia is streaming on Netflix. Can You See Us is based on a true story of a boy who becomes a successful musician despite obstacles caused by his genetic condition. Kati Short reports from Lusaka.
Say this, I am powerful.
The film Can You See Us looks at the life of Joseph, a boy in Lusaka, Zambia, who was born with albinism. Albinism is a rare genetic condition in which the body produces little or no pigment or melanin. In some places, people with this condition face discrimination. The life of Zambian musician John Chitty served as the inspiration for the movie. But his career has not been limited to music. In 2022, he was appointed to the Zambia Police Service Commission.
The first time I was watching the movie, when it was being premiered, it is like I'm watching myself. This is what has happened. This is what I went through. So it feels great.
Yasmin Dodia, one of the film's producers, faced logistical challenges when making the film.
It was a big production for me, my first feature film. So that's the first thing. The other thing was it was taxing in terms of having to bring teams from different parts of Africa together. We had people coming in from, on crew, we had people coming in from Tanzania, Kenya, South Africa and Zambia.
Nothing actually.
Kenny Mumba directed the film, which was written by Lawrence Thompson, who also produced it. 12-year-old actress Tabo Kamba plays Joseph. She says she hopes the film will help sensitize people about albinism.
I think it really changed the world for people who actually see people with albinism in a different way. It will like change their minds, and they'll know that it's not right to discriminate people just because of how they look.
For Dodia, the film is not only about telling Chitty's story, but also about encouraging more women like her to take on technical roles in film production on the continent.
My hope is that there will be more females stepping into male-dominated areas within the industry, not just limiting themselves. Females should not limit themselves to just your wardrobe and makeup roles, but take on more challenging roles, more roles that are deemed male, like, your camera assist, your director of photography, you know, your focus pulling, and of course, your producing.
The film's producers also hope it will open more doors for both male and female African filmmakers to tell their own stories and showcase the richness and diversity of African culture. Kathy Short, VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday, September 11, 2023. We now leave you with a song about the importance of a good wife.
Nabuna ngola ngunyelo ida, udo mimindo pinengunange, nabuna ngela, nabuna ngela.
sini ikingun iende na pana buna sida kumumumi komona konga karo kilo linyanya na pana buna sida kumumumi komona konga karo kilo linyanya.
We've been listening to a song about the importance of a good wife. Those are not my words. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Adrius Regis, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States continues to be concerned about irregularities in the June 24 presidential election in Sierra Leone. International observers noted statistical inconsistencies and condemned a lack of transparency in the voting. President Julius Maada Bio was declared winner of the presidential race with 56% of the vote in the first round, while his Sierra Leone People's Party won an overwhelming majority in the House of Parliament. Opposition candidate Dr. Samora Kamara got 41% of the vote. He has refused to participate in the government and has demanded a rerun of the election. Following the flawed vote, the United States called on the Sierra Leone government to institute an independent outside investigation of the elections process and integrate observer recommendations to improve future elections. The United States is committed to supporting and advancing democracy in Sierra Leone and around the world, declared Secretary of State Antony Blinken in a statement. Toward that end, he announced a new visa restriction policy under the Immigration and Nationality Act for undermining the democratic process in the June 2023 Sierra Leone election. Under this policy, the United States will pursue visa restrictions for those believed to be responsible for or complicit in undermining democracy in Sierra Leone, including through the manipulation or rigging of the electoral process, intimidation of voters, election observers, or civil society organizations through threats or acts of physical violence, or the abuse or violation of related human rights in Sierra Leone. Family members of such individuals may also be subject to these restrictions. Persons who undermine the democratic process in Sierra Leone, including in the leading up to, during, and following Sierra Leone's 2023 elections, may be found ineligible for U.S. visas under this policy. The visa restriction policy will apply to specific individuals and is not directed at the Sierra Leonean people. This decision, said Secretary Blinken, reflects the commitment of the United States to support Sierra Leoneans' aspirations to have free and fair elections that demonstrate the will of the people and strengthen democracy and the rule of law.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.